morning. It's Friday, and that means this is the 28th edition, believe it or not, of the Zoghbi Report, Real and Unscripted, where every week, Real and Unscripted, I, John Zoghbi, and my son and partner, Jeremy Zoghbi, take a look at the week in the news, try to do it as dispassionately as we possibly can, and offer a peek not only as to how we see our world politically, culturally, socially, but how we think it will play out into the future. Good morning, Jer. How are you?
Hey, Dad. Good morning. I'm good. Having fun. And, you know, let's get right into it. We always start off with politics. But before we do that, I just want to give a shout out to all of our listeners. You know, we have an eclectic mix of listenership ranging from Europe in the Czech Republic, the Netherlands, the UK, and then all throughout the United States. But what's really awesome is we have a lot of our family that are also tuning in. So a big shout out to the Zoghbi clan. And I want to just touch base upon a text that I received from one of our cousins the other day about the polls. So, you know, obviously we've been talking how our most recent one shows Biden up by 7, but then there are a lot of these other polls that have come out in the last week that are showing double digit leads, 13, 14 points. So it kind of got me thinking that this is a little bit, or seems a little bit, or a lot reminiscent of 2016, where leading up to Election Day, or let's just say the summer and into the fall, there were numerous polls showing that Hillary was in a lead and it was going to be a blowout. So I wanted to ask you what you thought about the chance that we could be experiencing a similar situation where, like, once again, we have so many polls that are showing double-digit leads, but could that really be the case? And what could, you know, work in Trump's favor, and what could really just fall apart on the Democratic side? Basically, do we see a repeat of 2016 regarding the polling numbers?
Okay, those are a lot of questions, and they're all good ones. So let's try to parse them. So first of all, you know, it was a month ago that we had a 13-point lead and for Biden, and that was at a time when there was only one other poll up there with us at a 14-point lead. Otherwise, it was high single digits. Generally speaking, throughout my career in polling, we have sort of led the pack and anticipated things that would be shown by other polls in their next round. And so, not surprisingly, then a whole bunch of other polls followed us with 13, 14, 15 point leads. And so this last round, the poll that we did actually on July 8th, we had the 7-point lead, and I suspect you're going to see the other polls follow. A natural kind of equilibrium, not so much Biden necessarily having a good week, but Trump continuing to have bad weeks, and evidence then that he was losing support among his own base. You have a Quinnipiac poll out just yesterday, so that would be July 15th, July 16th, showing Trump's approval rating at 36%. But what is it that we are seeing? We saw Trump in 2016 win big by double digits among the most conservative age cohort. Those are voters 65 and older. In our poll, where we had Biden leading overall by 13, we showed Biden leading among 65 plus by 10 points, a swing of 20 points since the election. The explanation clear, the number one victims at the time were of the coronavirus were over 65. And then also there's this sense of patriotism and nationalism and conservatism among the oldest age cohort, and a sense that America was kind of losing its image overseas, some of the values that these oldest generations had fought for. Not surprisingly, in our latest poll, however, the one that now has tightened up to 7 points, we do see that Biden and Trump are tied virtually among voters over 65. That's a huge swing there, which suggests to me, in answer to one of your questions, there's a volatility here, that there's nothing locked in, and that it's not so much going to be how voters respond to the immediate news cycle, but it's that they're genuinely unsure. I don't think that they like Donald Trump, but they're also not quite sure about Joe Biden. And so among the things to be looking at in these polls are the substantial numbers that we have of undecideds. We have slightly higher numbers of undecideds than we've had before. And that's going to cause not high volatility necessarily, but that's going to cause these numbers to change, to kind of seesaw between now and Election Day. I can go on, but I think that's the gist of my response.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's still up in the air, and yeah, we, and especially you, have cautioned that over the past few weeks. But, you know, just looking at the front page of Real Clear Politics, and by no means this isn't anything special. This is just a reflection of the divided nature of our country, but just a glance at some of the top headlines of today, the harsh realities sinking in for President Trump. So, mm-hmm. You know, you look at that article and it doesn't look well for President Trump. Another one says Democrats don't have the winning hand. That's the counter to that. But then here was one that really caught my eyes, and I just, you know, briefly glanced through this. Tucker Carlson's big ratings, good sign for Trump. So, I mean, basically what we're talking about here is that polling is essential in getting a snapshot of the day as far as, you know, what's the pulse of where Americans stand. But then there are also other little indicators that can point to where the trend is heading. And according to this article, Tucker has taken the lead on cable news. And I think that this has been a trend since late January. So, you know, we're approaching the end of, not the end, but we're into the third quarter of the year. And perhaps since the beginning of the year, Tucker Carlson has taken the lead over Sean Hannity for most watched cable news television program. And he's something like at, I think, 4 million views a month or whatever it is. But, you know, basically the point of the article is saying that here's a good indicator of why Trump may not be in trouble, because Tucker Carlson is so popular. What do you think about that? And what could be some other non-obvious indicators to watch as far as where the pulse of the nation is beyond polling?
Okay, there are two entities that come in crocs. One is soup. We're not talking about that. This argument is the other entity that comes in a croc. TV audiences are irrelevant. Remember, so 4 million people are watching Tucker Carlson. For that matter, however many are watching Rachel Maddow, remember, that means that 332 million are not watching. The Tucker Carlson boomlet means that the base, and that's who watches his shows, the base for Donald Trump are intense, and they're energized, and they're going to continue to be. Here and there, you might see Trump chisel off some of the support among his base. Remember, the economy is terrible, and the coronavirus is getting worse. But by and large, the numbers of people watching Tucker Carlson are irrelevant to the grander scheme of things. The people who are not watching, and for that matter, the people who are too busy trying to find a job, educate the kids, find childcare, survive, are the ones that we really want to pay attention to. What are they thinking? But what are some indicators? Well, I think our poll had a key indicator. Here's what I'm looking at. As people may know who've been following us, we did note in our poll that Biden had 77% support among Black voters, 14% supporting Trump, and then 9% undecided. Now, that's a small subsample, but it's a very important subsample. And we know that in order for a Democrat to win, Democrat needs at least, and normally gets, 90% of Black voters. Being at 77% is not good. Trump being at 14%, and frankly, those numbers have been holding in our polls now for a while, is not a lot of Black votes, but enough Black votes that can tilt whole states like Michigan and Wisconsin, for that matter, Atlanta and Georgia, states that could go either way. So Biden's going to have to pick up those numbers. And always remember this rule that I have learned more than 30 years ago. If you see undecideds among African American, that means that they may not or probably are not going to vote. And if that's the case, every African American that doesn't vote is pretty much a lost vote for Democrats. So I'm looking at that. I'm also looking at white Catholic voters. Now, there is not a Catholic vote per se. You know, it's not a bullet or an ideological vote, but there are Catholics who do vote. And the winning Democrats over the years, going back to Bill Clinton, won because they won with a substantial number of Catholic votes, including scoring well among white Catholics. Remember, at least 25% to 30% of all Catholics are Hispanic. But we're talking about white Catholics. Not that a Democrat needs to win white Catholics, but can't get trounced among white Catholics. And right now, Donald Trump is doing fairly well. He was slipping among white Catholics, but he seems to have resurged a little bit. Those are two items I'm looking at.
So it's expected that Biden will select a woman of color for his VP, for his running mate. With his support at currently at 77% among African Americans, do you expect that to bounce up to the 90 territory?
I do.
And just assuming that he comes out and affirms what everybody believes and what he has stated that he would do.
I do. And in fact, I was thinking of a scenario because there's a boomlet now for Senator Tammy Duckworth, who is Asian American, Thai born, although her father was in the military overseas, and of course an American citizen meeting the constitutional requirements. But Tammy Duckworth is, I think a lot of people know, is an Iraq War veteran, a pilot who lost both of her legs. And in fact, she found herself in a bit of a peeing match with Tucker Carlson recently. But Tammy Duckworth, if she is selected, I can see that announcement being made with Barack and Michelle Obama at their sides as the announcement is made, giving full cover and full endorsement to a non-African American woman. But it will be a woman of color. And you and I are not privy to what's going on in the private, confidential vetting process. But I suppose that Tammy Duckworth is in the running, as are Kamala Harris, Keisha Lance Bottoms, Val Demings, and a few other women. But yes, I do expect Biden to end up in the 90% category.
So what else is on your mind? What else do you want to talk about?
Well, we came out with a very well written, I'm saying that because you wrote it, The Intelligencer. It's our twice a month intelligence report based on our polling and our partnership with EMI Research Solutions out of Cincinnati. And one of the respondents, a very prominent DC journalist, said, are we going to fight a civil war over the last civil war? And I found that to be really poignant. You raised a number of issues about the cultural war over statues and about the status of the federal union and whether states will abide by the union or will see efforts at secession. Do you want to raise a few bullet points a little bit and we can talk about that?
Sure. Well, we've had a lot of good feedback from this fourth issue. By the way, if you haven't read it, check it out. It's titled After the Statues Fall, What Comes Next? Basically, we're amidst this cultural war division in so many ways. And I point out a lot of this work is grounded in historical analysis. And so I point out the fact that while division is nothing new to this nation, it goes back to the very founding of it. 2020 is a pivotal year. It's America's fourth major crisis. And it compounds on a piling mound of already existing divisions. But, looking at this notion of a civil war, and you've kind of heard this, some may have heard this coming into the debate or the discussion more and more, especially after the riots. But we had to ask the question, and the question was, in light of recent events, do you believe America will eventually overcome this current wave of disunity, or will America be pushed towards a civil war? We discussed yesterday the overall 50% said overcome, and you want to wipe your forehead and say, but 31% say that they worry that we'll eventually be pushed towards a civil war. But taking a deeper dive, looking at age, 38% of those 18 to 29, so that's 7 points higher than the overall, 33% of those 30 to 49, 31% of those 50 to 64, and 21% of those 65 plus all worry that we could eventually be pushed towards a civil war. Looking at the party breakdown, 23% of Democrats agree with that, and so that's lower than the overall, but 41% of Republicans, 30% of independents. And then I think it's also very important to look at this regionally. In the East, it mirrors the Democrat number with 23% agreeing that we could be pushed towards a civil war, 36% in the South, 32% in the Central / Great Lakes part of the country, and 31% in the West. So I go on to say that, look, I looking at these numbers and just, looking at the history of this nation in general, I think it's highly unlikely that one half of the nation will be in full-scale war with the other half of the nation I also think it's highly unlikely that this will become a partisan kind of war of Democrats versus Republicans or liberals versus conservatives. But what I do see is the potential for a splintering of this nation, a breakdown of national borders. And I back it up by the mere fact of what I call geographic realism. If you look at a European map over the last 1,000 years and you just randomly pick any century or look at every century, the borders are constantly in flux. This is not something that is special to Europe. This is really the case throughout world history. It's what I would call almost a law of history, the fact that boundaries are continuously shifting. And we in America have this sense that, you know, because 100 plus years, the continental American borders have looked the same. We just assume that it's always going to be that way, but it's not. It won't because of that law of history of ever-changing borders, and it won't because of the compounding division.
So let me comment for a second. So, you know, what's striking me about this is not so much the possibility, although I agree that there is that possibility. I think the loyalty necessarily to existing borders is not as important among younger people than it always has been. But I think I'm struck as well by about the 1 in 5 or 20% who aren't sure. You know, not sure can be a very powerful political statement, but at the very least, what it means is they're either not sure of the importance of a federal union, they're not so sure about the relevance of the Constitution, or they're just simply not so sure that any of this structure is actually needed, all of which suggests that, you know, there is a strong potential for some crumbling to take place. Now, can that be healed? I'm sure it can be. What will it take to heal it, though? And do we really need to go through this kind of a major political upheaval at the same time that we're dealing with two of the most serious crises country has ever had, this full-scale pandemic that is not easing at all, and of course the economy, which certainly is headed in Great Depression territory. Those are my questions, and unless you have anything to say, maybe we should just cut it right here, and that be something that we take some time, all of us, to think about, and we welcome your comments.
Well, I agree. I could obviously go into this more, but I really want folks to take a look at this. I think that they will come away with a better understanding of where we are presently, where we've come from, and what likely is to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. So I'll say signing off, and I look forward to next week.
Same here. We'll talk next week. Bye-bye, everybody.